All right, so first, shkoyach everybody for coming. Thank you to Yitz, who's always hosting shiurim.
Debbie,
I forgot. Debbie's also here. You're actually here now. Usually it's a men's shiur, so usually it's both of you hosting, and you're the one who makes sure that it happens. But for this shiur, we officially said it was for both men and women. So thank you for both of you, regardless of, what'd you say? All of your hachnas orchem and your helping to have shiurim and spread Torah and Yad B'Yamin, we all really appreciate it. It's already mentioned before, we have a lot of people tonight that are not necessarily able to make it, but are planning on listening to the shiur afterwards. So Bezrat Hashem, we're hoping that all the shiur will actually get recorded properly, despite the fact that my recording devices are not actually working right now. The first two shiurim that we're going to have tonight are both about Shemitah's Kesafim. So basically, it's me and Rav Orlian is going to be more or less of a tag team. In terms of the topics there, the two shiurim will flow from one to the other. I'm sure that both of us will also end up commenting on the other's shiur as well, because Shemitah's Kesafim is a very important topic, and we're dividing it up into a specific way. But as you'll see, a lot of the concepts will be very, very much of an overlap between my shiur and between his shiur. What I'm going to try to do is give you a broad overview of the concept and a little bit of the halachos behind Shemitah's Kesafim, the cancellation of debts, which we'll talk about in just a minute, as well as given a bit of an introduction to Prusbul, meaning what is Prusbul, what does it try to accomplish, and how does it do that? And then Rav Orlian is going to go into a number of the practical points of how the Prusbul is actually written and what issues does that create in terms of halacha l'masa, writing and actually working through the Prusbul here for us, and also differences between Ashkenazim and Sephardim, which actually is a big deal when it comes to Prusbul. After that, so the shiurim, Rav Daniel, hopefully will talk about the Arba Minim on Shemitah, and somewhere in between, Rav Orlian will help us, and also probably have some other comments as well, but he'll help us get through some of the questions very briefly about what to do after Shemitah is over, what issues are still relevant. Okay, so let's get started. So the first question is, what exactly is Shemitah's Kesafim, and where does it come from? So the answer is, this, I think most of us are at least somewhat familiar with this idea, Shemitah, the actual word Shemitah, we call the year Shemitah, but the actual word in the Torah of Shemitah, anybody know what it means?
Stop
or even a little better than that. I would say even more.
Cease
or even a little more than that, you could say. Desist? Okay.
When Aramaic policemen say,
Shemot. Aramaic policemen?
Like freeze.
This is an interesting one. I see. Okay,
that kind of
Baruch Hashem, I've never encountered those police before. Hope I never will. Okay, so I was going to say, I think the word in this context and often means not just to cease or desist, but also to let go. Okay, so it's a little bit more than just a stop. Let go means to pull back or to let something go, be taken away by itself or something along those lines. That's what I'm about to mention. You can, if I don't mention your point after that, you can mention it again. What's that?
No, release.
Exactly right. So that, I think that's really the best word is really release. Okay. The only time that the Torah refers to the year of Shemitah as Shemitah is the section of Shemitah's Kesafim, which was 2 weeks ago in the Parsha, Parshas Re'eh. All the other times it refers to Shana Hashvius, Shana Shabbason, etc. Here is the only time that it says Shemitah. It says Miketz Shavah Shanim Taaseh Shemitah. Parak Tezvav in Parshas Re'eh. This is the idea of Shemitah. Shamot kol ba'al ma'ashe yado asher yashev v're'ehu. Okay, basically, you have to be shamot, somebody who is a creditor. We'll discuss what that means in just a minute, but somebody who is owed money by someone else should release his debt. Okay, he should release his hold on the other person. He owes you money, and you, Kielu, can, hopefully not physically, you can, figuratively choke him by squeezing the money out of him. But the point is, when it comes to Shemitah, the Shemitah's Kesafim, again translated into English as cancellation of debts, is basically releasing, desisting, holding back, and not controlling him. Now you say, I'm not going to collect my debt, you don't have to pay me back. That's basically the idea of the Torah here. So there are three mitzvahs actually included in this. They're all related, obviously, but the first one is a mitzvah aseh, a positive mitzvah, and that's the one we just mentioned, that there's a positive mitzvah to release your hold on as a creditor on somebody who owes you money. That's shamot. The second mitzvah is lo taaseh, and that is the next part of the pasuk, lo yigos es re'eu v'esachiv. Okay, you should not claim your debt from the person that owes you money. That's the lo taaseh. And the third mitzvah, which is also a lotase, is shortly afterwards, where it says, "Yishamar lecha pen yedavar im lecha b'liyal." Le'mor karva shenasa shavah shenasa shmita. Basically, you should be careful and don't let your heart, your gut, your feeling. Again, I'm translating freely. It's not really a direct translation, but the idea is you shouldn't let yourself get carried away. That you say, well, Shemitah's coming, and I know that at the end of the Shemitah year, if I, if he owes me money and he hasn't paid me back yet, the debt is canceled. I can't get my money back. So what am I going to do to protect myself? I'm just not going to lend money. I'm not going to lend him. Great, I don't lose anything. So the Torah says, don't do that. You can't not lend money because of the fact that you're worried that you might not get your money back. That's the third mitzvah, which is also a lotase.
Is that at any point in time?
What do you mean? Okay, so we'll have to talk about this a little more when we sort of tighten the halakhic aspects of when exactly these things apply. We'll discuss the when is the lotase exactly relevant. Okay, come back to that, Ezra Hashem. Okay, very briefly, again, you could spend the whole shiur just on this, but very briefly, what are some of the reasons given behind the mitzvah of Shemitah Kesafim? So if you remember from your own learning or from previous shiur, like a year ago or so, there's quite a few reasons given for the mitzvah of Shemitah in general. And it's not surprising that a number of the reasons given for Shemitah Kesafim also overlap or really correlate with the reasons that are given for Shemitah Bichlal. Okay, so without going into too much detail, without getting into all the reasons, I'll just throw a couple ideas at you, which are mentioned in the Sefer Achinuch and one or two other things. The Sefer Achinuch first points out that part of Shemitah Kesafim is to remember that Hashem owns everything, which is certainly a clear idea during Shemitah itself. In this context, essentially what he means seems to be that if Hashem owns everything, so the fact that you're not getting your money back that you owe, that you rightfully deserve, and you're worried, well, I gave him a $10,000 loan and I'm going to lose it because Shemitah is coming. So don't worry, Hashem will take care of you. The same way that Hashem will take care of the farmer who is not planting during Shemitah, so too Hashem will take care of every person who lends money to help somebody else. He doesn't have to worry that he's going to go broke. That's one.
Sounds a bit like Greece.
Was that? Okay, good. So too bad Greece is not Eretz Yisrael, but the fact is, as we'll see, Shemitah Kesafim applies everywhere. So it's an interesting idea. If we were writing political commentary or one of these things in the newspaper, articles about Jewish values related to things happening in the world, it's a great application which I hadn't thought of myself. But yeah, all right, well, you'll figure out how to write that exactly, that it makes sense and has something to give over to people. Good. Number two, another idea which is briefly alluded to in the Sefer Achinuch is the idea of vatranus, the idea of letting go, which we mentioned before. This is part of the definition of the word Shemitah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I heard that. My wife told me they spoke about that. That's right.
That's right, man. Maybe that's why he did
say. Did they mention Shemitah Kesafim in that thing, or they didn't mention it? I guess it was Tisha B'Av, so it wasn't really the topic, and you can't really talk too much about other Torah. But it's definitely very, very relevant here as well, that you have to realize, yeah, he rightfully owes me money. It's my money. I deserve it back. But at the same time, I'm going to realize that if he needs the money and he's in financial trouble, then Shemitah teaches us that that we're going to let go. We're going to say, I'm a vater, I'll do without my money. It's okay. If you need the money more, I will make do with what I have. I will, even though I deserve the money back, I'll let go. I won't get it back. That's number two. Number three, also similar idea mentioned in the Sefer Achinuch, is that we train ourselves to not be jealous of others, and also not to think about stealing. Okay, it's not really a direct idea, but it's the general concept seems to be that if we don't get our money back, so we train ourselves to not get upset. Because we don't say, I'm jealous, I wish I had $10,000, it's really mine, I shouldn't get it. You're not going to be jealous of another person because of the money they own. That lesson is supposed to be conveyed to you by the fact that you can't take your money back from somebody else. Again, I'm not sure if that's the most tight reason, I guess, but the general concept of realizing that money is not the end-all and be-all of the world, and we shouldn't necessarily be jealous of other people and trying to steal things from other people. We should be happy with what we have. That's, I guess, a general concept which is mentioned here. That's another concept here. The Rambam, the Mor Nevucha, mentions another idea which I think is one of the most widespread ideas when it comes to Shemitah Kesafim and Shemitah in general as well, and that is just the simple fact that we get to help others. And the fact that somebody who's in financial distress has the opportunity here to get a clean slate. He gets to start fresh, even though he has numerous debts. But if the debts will all be forgiven at the end of the Shemitah year, he can really start from zero and begin again and not have to worry about paying back the previous debts. So the Rambam and the Mor Nevuchim, that's also an important idea which is mentioned, of Ezra La'aniim, okay, helping people that are poor or not as well.
Torah chapter 5, yeah.
Okay. I thought you were talking about Parakeh, and I missed the reference. Definitely. Now I got it. Yeah. Let me get it. Okay, yeah, exactly, right. That's exactly the concept. Good. Okay, so that's the Rambam. And the last point Rav Kook talks about a little bit in his introduction to his Sefer on Shemitah, which again, he has some very lofty ideas about Shemitah in general. And here, when it comes to Shemitah's Ksafim, he adds in some of the same points, which Rav Rimon is nice enough here to quote. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Basically, he says that it's a Shnat Sheket V'Shalva, a year of quiet and tranquility, I guess we could translate Shalva, Be'ein Nogeis V'Rodeh, without anybody going and, you know, bearing down on somebody else trying to get their money back. It's a Shnat Shiva Yonu Margoa, a year of equality, and also rest and comfortability. I guess that's not, Margoa is really more, I'm going to translate Margoa, also tranquility, I guess, right? It goes on, you know, the idea of not having individual owned assets. Ein rechush prati misuyam. Okay, nothing specifically belongs to you. That's part of the idea of making your fruits hefker. But here also, when it comes to taking back loans, a similar idea is relevant as well. Shalom Eloki shawer al kol neshama v'apo. And a godly peace basically rests upon every being with the soul. So that's another nice idea that Rav Kook has about the idea of equality and no arguments with people about somebody claiming money from somebody else, etc., etc. Okay, that's the machshava behind Shemitah's Ksafim. It's really, if you think about it, a very beautiful mitzvah that's you know, here, and even though the way that it's practiced today is a little bit different, but the concept is still very, very, very important. Let's talk about some of the points which are more halachic. Before I guess I get to the rest of the points, one important issue, which is somewhat relevant to the reasons, is the following point. Okay, now that we mentioned all those things, and later we're going to talk about Prizbul, the fact that today we get around all these ideas and we try to write a document where we say we want to collect our money anyway, the question is it appropriate in any way to still follow the Torah's rules about Shemitah's Ksafim of not taking money back? So the answer is, I guess, two points to that answer. Number one, the main point I was going to say is that the Ben Ish Chai has a nice comment, which I think is pretty widely followed today, that that ideally even somebody who writes a Prizbul should still afterwards make some sort of loan after he writes the Prizbul, so that, and that loan that he gives, he will not request back afterwards. So at the very least, even if your main thing is you will be writing a Prizbul and getting back your money, but you will have at least one opportunity to be Mekayim in the midst of Shemitah's Ksafim properly by giving even a small loan and not asking for it back afterwards. On the other side of the coin, the question is, it's nice to help people. Let's say that somebody says, I want to pay you back. I mean, let's say you're going to go through Shemitah's Ksafim, and somebody says, I want to give you the money back. So the question is he able to do that? If the debt is canceled, are you allowed to still say to somebody, I want to give you the money back? Again, this is in the case of where there's no Prizbul. So the answer is actually that he's allowed to, or maybe it's even a good thing. They say that Ruach HaChamim Nochaimenu, that Chacham are actually happy when you do that, meaning the following.
Well, you just give it as a matana anyway. I mean, it's just like, yeah, I'm giving you a gift of $10,000.
So maybe you could, but I think part of the idea here, again, on the flip side of the coin, really, is that right? Right, right. I would think it's even more than that. I think that also, you know, there's a concept that Shemitah's Ksafim is very nice, and we want to help people that need the help that can't pay back the money. Ideally, in the Torah's world, but at the same time, somebody that really can pay back the money, he's not allowed to use Shemitah's Ksafim as an excuse to say that he's not going to pay back the money when he does have the wherewithal to do so. That's what seems to come across from the Mishnah.
But when you do also, when you add to the mitzvah, when you, especially when it comes to minhag, right, it becomes the problem, but then everyone else has to add to it. Like, if I invite 200 people to my wedding, which is not in mitzvah at all,
right,
and you have to invite 200 people, and you have to invite 250, then 300.
So what are you saying?
If I pay back my loan,
right.
So from I'm going to pay back my loan, and then he has a loan, and it's like, you know, if we both have a loan to the same person,
right,
he's going to be looking at you like,
I hear what you're saying. I assume for Shemitah, right?
I
assume the answer is that for Shemitah specifically, because you don't have to pay back, and everybody knows you don't have to pay back, I assume that if one person pays back, that's not going to happen. You have to think about it. It's an interesting point. That's also true, I guess. But you never know. I think everything's public. You know, everybody knows.
The incentive to pay back a loan, but you know that you can, those sites going to be what came when you get to...
Well, what's going to happen for the first 7 years before that?
It's no interest.
Nothing. So, sorry, I'll pay you at the moment.
That's not so simple. We're not going to get into that now, but that's already complicated. If the loan is due 6 years beforehand, you know, you can't just wait 6 years and, you know, you're going to get in big trouble. They're going to take all your things first. They're going to take out your house. They're going to sell your, force you to sell your house. What did you say? Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah, for sure. That's what I'm saying. You can't just hang out for 6 years and wait.
If it's... They get forced, you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
Assuming the loan was due.
Right, correct.
If you pay back a loan that's forgiven, is it interest?
All right, you want to... I don't know if you should get this now. I don't think so. Shouldn't be. It's saying, but it says, off al pikein, if you want to pay back.
Because you're saying you're paying back the loan, but there's no more loan.
Right. But the point is, because in the framework, and I just wanted to mention this as a brief point, within the framework of Shemitah's Kesafim, the idea still exists that you're allowed to pay back if you want to, and the guy can accept you paying back. So even if the loan is technically forgiven, it's recommended to pay back. It's nice to pay back, and maybe even the right thing to do. So it doesn't, you know, of course, it's not any kind of difference. Yeah, sorry.
There, because if the lender is MLND, you know, and the borrowers are all corporate entities.
Great question. Okay, good. So we'll talk about it. Okay, but Bezer Hashem, we'll get to it in a few minutes. Okay, good question. All right, let's go quickly through some of the basic points about Shemitah's Kesafim. Again, each one of these is an interesting point, and a lot of these have interesting makaros, and I didn't have a chance to make a makaro sheet, unfortunately. But anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on each point. I want to just get through so we have a basic idea of all the important points about Shemitah's Kesafim, at least as many as we can get to. Okay, next point. By the way, if anybody has this sheet, I sent out this sheet that I'm reading from, this outline of mine. Actually, I sent it on the groups today when I posted it. So if you want to see the outline inside, it's posted, it's attached to all the what is that? It's on your phone. Great. So I see we're using the phone now, so unfortunately you can't look at it. I apologize about that. Okay. So next point. Does Shemitah's Kesafim apply outside of Eretz Yisrael? So the answer is
yes.
Yes. Halacha Lamasa, the answer is absolutely yes. Okay, there was some discussion on the Rishonim about it, but the bottom line is it's very clear halacha that we definitely hold that it applies outside of Eretz Yisrael, and that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. And the reason is very simple. The reason is that Shemitah, in terms of the land, is a land-based mitzvah, land-based halacha, which applies only in Eretz Yisrael. Shemitah's Kesafim is based on a person, with the Chovas HaGavra, and generally speaking, mitzvahs that are based on people rather than on land or location apply everywhere. And that's the halacha here as well. Shemitah's Kesafim applies just as much in Chutz Laretz.
How do you know Shemitah applies only to Eretz Yisrael?
Well, the Torah talks about Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah.
And it's mitzvahs of Chutz Laretz. It's pretty clear. The question is, where's the border? That's a different question. And maybe there's some areas close to Eretz Yisrael, which might be some question about certain aspects, but...
Yeah, it's any land that you own.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Yeah. Okay.
And between Jew and Jew.
What do you mean? Shemitah's Kesafim?
Yeah.
Correct, yes. It's not with non-Jews. I mean, non-Jews, is no halakha of Shemitah's Kesafim whatsoever. Good. Okay. Does Shemitah's Kesafim apply to women? So the answer is... Yes, absolutely. Okay. The reason you might not have thought that is because one could argue that we mentioned before the mitzvah aseh of Shamot is a mitzvah aseh shazman groma. It applies time bounds related to the year of Shemitah, or the end of the year of Shemitah, whatever it is, as we'll see shortly. So maybe you would say that women are generally not chayav in mitzvah aseh shazman groma. However, the halacha, this is mentioned by the Sefer HaChinuch, is that women are included in Shemitah's Kesafim because of the fact that we have two mitzvahs lo taseh that we mentioned before, and women are subject to mitzvahs lo taseh. So that's an important halacha to keep in mind. This takes effect, I don't know if Roland's going to discuss it, but I'll just mention it briefly now. When it comes to writing a prosbul, so women also should write a prosbul, meaning as follows, meaning any assets or property or money or accounts or whatever that are owned by, let's say, a wife, okay, that's not directly owned by the husband, are not included in the husband's prosbul, and therefore the woman also has to have, the wife also has to have a prosbul written for her assets specifically. Now, that can be done by the husband as well, meaning the husband, when he goes to write the prosbul, he can have, basically, he can be appointed by his wife as a shliach, and his prosbul can include both of them, but that, ideally, I guess, that should be explicated. It definitely should be, ideally, should be mentioned, at least verbally, right? I think if you didn't, I don't know if it's ma'akev, but ideally, probably you should, right?
I mean, the thing is, if this money, which is jointly, I have a joint bank.
Okay, so that's not what I'm...
No, we're talking about money. Correct. Which is hers only.
That's exactly. That's what
I said. The question I have, which I'm just raising now, I don't know what the answer to it is. If the bank account is joint, that's typically, but she has pension funds, is a pension fund the kind of thing, you know, she'll have a pension account under her own name? Does that also warrant a principal or not?
as they can.
Well, that's the question.
Well, we're going to get to it. A personal basically means that you declare
loan.
That any
it's
right.
A loan. No.
It's money that's owed to you by somebody else. So money that's owed to you by somebody else. You say, I want to continue to be able to collect my money. I'm not going to let my debt be canceled by the Shemitah year. So any, what did you
say? The question is it considered like a loan? Because the bank, even though it's supposed to be you're depositing, basically you're really lending the bank
right.
in the sense that they're taking your money and doing it whatever they want.
Right.
And a pension fund is, one could argue it's the same thing, but maybe a little bit different, because basically you're they work with shares. I don't know how pension funds work.
Well, it's an interest-bearing,
essentially. Same thing, just different taxes. There's just a couple extra rules on it. Like you can't take it until you're 65, or you get less taxes on it. It's just a special...
It's invested for you, but it's invested for you.
They don't say, we're going to give another 100 shekels, let's go figure out what stock to buy. They take their old big money and they have guys invest it.
You're loaning them money.
Right.
You just put money in a big pie in there.
For you.
Yeah.
But it's still your money. Yeah. Okay, it's an interesting question. Lemaitse, I guess, probably anyway.
That's a relevant question.
Right.
That's a relevant
right.
question. They take like 1% of the whole thing.
Right.
And if it makes money,
right.
you get it. They don't take a percent right. of the winnings.
Well, right.
they
do because they're taking a percent of the accumulation.
If they lose their win, they'll take X percent.
Yes.
The whole thing will just gain or go. Your money will go up or down.
Right. It's probably a good idea anyway, regardless, just in case to have, that even if the husband goes to do the prizbal, that the husband should be appointed as the shliach for the wife, just in case, even if it's not that, it's something else. We have certain situations where...
The concept of the loan, if I buy something for someone else as a favor, they're going to pay me back.
Right.
But I buy them, objects, that's considered a loan.
Very probably. Again, this gets into a little bit of questions about ribis, because they talk about that in terms of ribis, that exact shiloh. Most probably. Let me get through a couple more points here. What you'll see basically is that there are a lot of situations that you might not have realized would be included in the halachas of loans, which basically dictate that every single person should write a prizbal, even if you claim to me that, or to the Beis Din, that you didn't lend anybody any money recently. Okay, so again, even at this point, there's so many points that this could be relevant to. I'm just going to mention a few. Okay, I'm just going to mention a couple so you get the idea. We'll get to that hopefully in a few minutes. Okay, next. When does Shemitah Ksavim take effect? So this is what somebody mentioned before. So the answer is as follows. The Gemara says in Erechin that the end of the Shemitah year is when the exact time that the debts are canceled. Okay, meaning at the very end of the Shemitah year, right as Rosh Hashanah comes, so that's when all the debts that are owed would be canceled. Okay, that's in terms of the debts being canceled. Now, the question is, when does the prohibition of lo yigo start? Meaning, the concept that you can't go and actually ask somebody for your money back, does that start at the same time, which would be logical? Or do we say, no, maybe that actually starts at the beginning of the year? And this, believe it or not, is actually a machlokas rishonim. Okay, the Rosh has a very famous opinion that he mentions that perhaps lo yigos, the prohibition against asking for your money back, actually applies at the beginning of the Shemitah year. So even if debts are not canceled till later, if you already can't claim your debts at the beginning of the year, what that basically means is that you need to write a prizbul declaring that you want to continue to collect your debts at the beginning of the Shemitah year. Okay, so that opinion is not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, by the way, is all in the Choshen Mishpat, interestingly enough, because it's money, it's not land-based. Siman Samach Zayin. So the Shulchan Aruch Paskin is not like that. He Paskin is like most opinions, which is that that the claiming of debts lo yigos, as well as the actual shamot, the cancellation of debts, all apply at the end of the year. So the bottom line is that the halacha, the strict halacha, is that Shemitah only takes place at the end of this year, at the end of El, right before Rosh Hashanah, and therefore writing a prizbul, generally speaking, would be done around now. We'll talk about that more later, either me or Orlin, we'll get to that in a little more in detail. However, there are some poskim that are machmir. I saw this. I mean, there's a lot of poskim that say it's a good idea to be machmir, but it's not required. But Rav Eliyashiv, I saw Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Ramon Saber also apparently was machmir like this. And they also are machmir as a personal chumrah to do an additional prizbal at the beginning of the Shemitah year to follow the opinion of the Rosh. Again, it's not on the Shulchan Aruch, it's not required.
At the beginning of the year.
What'd you say? You still have to do it at the end. You got to do both.
Then there's like a 1 year full time period when no one would ever give anybody a loan?
No. You would. Just they would say that the first part of... anything that you have at that point would be, you know, the lo yigos that begins to apply at the beginning of Shemitah, that lo yigos is basically overridden by saying that I'm not getting rid of my debts. Which is what the end of Shemitah you still have to do. Okay, nobody's arguing with that. The question is that maybe whatever debts you already had at the beginning of the year also would be canceled. Okay, I mean, not canceled, but you can't go collect them afterwards. You can't go ask for them. Anything that existed at the beginning of Shemitah. So again, you know, I don't think anybody says you really have to do this. It's if someone who wanted to be personally machmer for the next Shemitah cycle, I guess you can keep it in mind. Again, most people don't say that, but I'm just pointing out there are some poskim that take that opinion into account as a chumrah. Okay, next question. Shemitah's ksafim for loans that are due after Shemitah is over. Okay, let's say that you lend money. We have any form of a loan that takes place, let's say, now, a month or two ago, whatever it is, but it's not due until after Rosh Hashanah. It's not due until next year, after Shemitah. Is that included in the halacha of Shemitah's ksafim? And the answer is that the Gemara has machlokas about this. It's a famous Gemara in Makos. Anybody who ever did Makos before? So this is a famous machlokas there. And it's a machlokas rishonim also, what the halacha is. And the bottom line halacha is that the Shulchan Aruch paskins, at least in most cases, the Shulchan Aruch is clear that there is no Shemitah's ksafim in that case. Okay, meaning that if your loan is not due until after Rosh Hashanah, then the whole halacha of Shemitah's ksafim does not apply. There's no need for a prizbal, etc., etc. Okay, the idea in that case is just that maybe Shemitah's ksafim only applies when you are able to request to demand or to ask for your money back at that time. But in this case, you can't ask for your money back until the loan is due, which is not until after Shemitah. So because you can't ask for the money back until the loan is due, and the loan is not due until after Shemitah is over, so therefore maybe that's why we pass that Shemitah doesn't apply.
So I don't understand. What do they have
Prizbal is for Prizbal is for loans that are given and are due before the end of this year. Okay, meaning any loan which is due before Rosh Hashanah.
But when I asked why can't you just delay paying back the loan, someone said, well, you can. The person can come and demand their money back because it's due.
Now. Well, you were asking about like 6 years before that. Meaning for now, you have a good question. You have a point.
Is this only applicable if the loan falls due in the Shemitah year itself? As like if a loan fell due like in the sixth year, something like that.
Right. You're right. It would apply then also. What Rav Daniel was pointing out before is just that it's not so practical in that case that you would go a whole however many time long it is before being, you know, sued by, you know, taking the base then or whatever.
Money in the third year. And then he just has a debt. He's just this poor person who just owes $1 million. And at some point, it will just stop. The debt will just stop. Because they basically can't do anything. He doesn't have any money.
So in order to continue to collect that, you need to do a puzzle in the Shemitah year, right? But if the lechatila, the loan was only due for the eighth year of the cycle.
It's only for outstanding debts. Okay. It's for debts that are already outstanding.
I mean, when we pass it, it says in the star.
Debts that already passed the due.
It says in the star that it's due in 2018. And it has to be written that the due date is after.
Okay. In other words, like, we don't have to start doing the bank doesn't have to start doing proposals on their mortgages and stuff.
Does every month?
Whatever is due then, as if you fell behind on your mortgage payments, whatever payments are already past due would be included.
Yeah.
I bet they do it now.
And whatever is not, right? Whatever happens. But by the way, that this idea might also answer the question about the pensions. The pensions are probably something which is only due
later.
Later.
I see what you're saying.
So that might solve.
Of course. Yeah, I guess.
On one end, I can claim.
That's true. Yeah.
I can claim this so-called loan that I'm giving to the bank to an account at any time.
Right, so that's the only difference. That's the only question. If you can claim your pension money beforehand,
but it's open-ended.
You can't. I mean,
so if
you
the answer, you probably can't, right? In most cases, you can't.
I mean,
you can. Uh-huh. So that is still shallow.
It could be that
you'll
pension
earlier.
That's a sure question. I mean, we're talking about if it wasn't, but you're right. If you collect it during the Shemitah year, if that comes, then for sure that's a question. Then it definitely is relevant. Okay, good. Yashkoch.
It's not the but the fact that it's not supposed to.
Can you just include in the prizbal?
Well, that's why, right, you get the point. I mean, prizbal is really important, even if not sure. Okay, let's go on. How long, Reb Orlin, how long do you need for your shir? I was going to give you 40 minutes, but I think if half an hour is good enough for you, it's, okay. Okay, fine. Okay, good. Okay, so let's go on. Okay, so let's talk about a couple situations of debts that one could ask whether you need a prizbal or not. Meaning, let's say somebody comes along, and as I told you before, you say, well, I didn't lend anyone money anytime recently. So I feel that I don't need to go to the effort of making a prosbul. It's not really that difficult, assuming that a lot of the stuff is done for you. We'll talk about later. But let's say he doesn't want to, doesn't feel like it, doesn't think it's necessary. So the question is that really true? Or are there other situations which are not directly loans, but really are loans and would still require a prosbul? So the answer is, let's look at some cases. Okay, number one, okay, an actual loan. We know for sure that a loan is definitely relevant to this, meaning anybody who actually lends somebody money and the loan is due, as we mentioned before, the loan is due before the end of the Shemitah year is certainly subject to Shemitah's Kesafim if it hasn't yet been paid back, and therefore you certainly would need a prosbul if you want to get that money back. Point number two, what about a debt? Okay, meaning not specifically a loan, but you owe somebody money. Okay, let's say that you bought something and you didn't actually pay for what you bought yet, or you have, again, whatever, tuition, who knows what, all sorts of different things, that you owe somebody money, and you didn't yet pay for it, and it's not exactly a loan. So does Shemitah's Kesafim apply in that situation if, you know, Rosh Hashanah comes and you didn't pay back yet, is it canceled?
Like Nezikin also, kind of thing?
So Nezikin, I don't know offhand. I don't remember
it
seeing
it.
Remember? I would think that's not included. I would think it's not included, but I don't remember 100% of it. Right. But do you remember where they mentioned that? I don't remember seeing it offhand. I'm sure it makes sense. Though. With the other cases, it definitely is logical. That should be the case. I'll let us know it should not be included in the cancellation. But I'm not sure if everybody agrees to that, so that's what we have to look up. Good. Based on who says that? Is it Shulchan Aruch or somewhere else?
That's the whole line.
Yeah.
Like Gezel.
What?
The
Gezel. Okay, good. Okay, great. So the Mishnah says that that in these types of situations, okay, it's called, in the Mishnah it's called Hakapas Achanus, which is basically, again, when you pay, you buy something, you don't actually pay for it right then. So the Mishnah says that that's not included in Shemitah's Kesafim, meaning that if you didn't pay back, your debt will not be canceled when Rosh Hashanah comes. However, if you turn it into a loan, if you transform it into a loan, then maybe it would be subject to Shemitah's Kesafim. But other than that, it would not be included. There is some discussion about why that might be, which is going to be relevant in a minute, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. As far as Nezek and as far as Gezel,
that's
saying that if there really was some, that it was converted into a debt, then it would be.
Okay.
Right. I mean, the reason already said yes. The Gezel will happen, Shmuel, you owe two times.
Right.
And then, cheap, whatever it is.
And then.
Okay, good. Okay, anyway, so there's a little bit of machlokas of what the reason behind this is, but the bottom line is that in most situations, debt is if it's not turned into a loan, so it's not included. However, as I mentioned before, there is a bit of a machlokas about it, which it's hard to get into the reasons because it's a little bit complicated and we don't really have time now. But some people say that the reason behind that is a reason which is not necessarily relevant in many situations. It has to do with how long it takes for you to pay back. That maybe that's only true in the situation where it's going to take you a year or two to pay back, in which case it's related to what we said before, that your debt is not chal until after the Shemitah year, which wouldn't be subject to. But if you have a debt that's due before the end of the year, maybe it would be included. Again, I don't get into it so much now, but we'll see in a minute that actually is relevant to other cases as well. I'll give you another example in just a second. Another interesting question that's just related to this, the following. What happens if you have a salary question? Meaning, let's say that you are owed your salary by a certain date. And let's say, this has been relevant for me recently as well. I'm not going to say from who or from what, but this has been relevant for me, unfortunately. I hope this will change soon. But let's say you haven't yet been paid back and Rosh Hashanah is coming and you're owed your money. Okay? Does your employer have the right to say that my debts have been canceled and Shemitah's Kesafim, I don't have to pay your salary?
Well, every salary is like that. I mean, everyone who is working is going to have their August or...
The question is like this. If you are due your salary before Rosh Hashanah begins, so this year Rosh Hashanah is...
And they didn't pay it.
Rosh Hashanah is September 14th, okay. Right, I think? So let's say that your salary is due in the first part of the month, which is often the case. Right. But let's say it was due already, whatever day you regularly get paid, it was, September 7th, for example. But it wasn't yet paid until Rosh Hashanah came around. So that's the Shiloh. So in that situation, is there Shemitah's Kesafim, which is a big deal, obviously. You don't want to lose your salary. So the answer is that it's actually a similar machlokas to what we said before. Many poskim say that it's definitely not included in the Shemitah's Kesafim because it's like the case of the debts that we mentioned before. Debts are not loans, and that's the end of the story. Others say, well, no, maybe it is included in the Shemitah's Kesafim because some people say that the whole story with the debts is that the only reason why it's not included, again, this is what some of the Mefarshim explain the Mishnah as saying, is because most of those debts that they were talking about in the Mishnah were debts that didn't take effect, that you would have to actually pay back until a year later. I mean, it would be like a year debt. Same thing with a salary. Again, this is not so common today, but at one time maybe this was more common, that you weren't owed, you know, your salary, your money for your salary until, let's say, a year later. Again, how often common it was, I don't know. But some of the prominent Mepharshim actually say that's the situation, that they're talking about a case where you're not owed your money till next year, in which case we said before, the halacha is that that's not so the Shemitah's Kesafim anyway, because it's after Rosh Hashanah when it's owed. But a salary that which is due before Rosh Hashanah, it's due right now, so according to those, would be subject to Shemitah's Kesafim, in which case, yeah, you could lose your salary. The employer could just say, Shemitah's Kesafim, I don't have to pay you back. So this is another good reason why we're machmir that every single person should write a prisbul because of these kind of situations that come up, just to be sure that even, you know, whatever it is, that you're covered, that you don't have any shiloh whatsoever.
On
yeah. So again, the same question, okay, of the debts, same issue. If the rent is due at that point and it hasn't yet been paid by Rosh Hashanah, so according to these poskim lechora, they would say that, you know,
you
it's not...
You have a contract, like you have like a year contract to pay, whatever, 1,000 shekels every month.
Right, the point
it's
is...
Not like,
right.
It's not like, but if you don't live there in March, you don't have to pay.
Right, no, it's due every month,
you know
right?
I mean?
It's due every month. It's not due every year.
Yeah,
exactly.
That day, but
right, so the same idea. I mean, the same idea that some poskim would say that it is included in Shemitah's Kesafim, in which case we want to make sure that at least the renter, the landlord, wants to make sure to write a prisbul to make sure that that's included. Baruch Hashem, again, you don't have to write every single situation if you're writing a prisbul. You don't have to write every single debt that you're owed.
Right.
It's a general document. Which you write that you declare that you're still taking you still want your money back. A few other situations, which also, just give me another minute or two before you ask questions. Other interesting cases. Okay, what about if you're at a check that has not been cashed yet? What about your bank account? Not in terms of you paying the bank, but the other direction, your bank account that you have money in the bank. So as we mentioned before already a little bit, again, it's machlokas exactly how a check works, but it's possible that a check is the same thing, that maybe a check is ki'ilu, the money is being lent, and then if you're going to cash the check, maybe the person cashing the check is ki'ilu, he was owed, you know, ki'ilu, he was lending money, and he hasn't yet cashed it, now he's taking the money back. Maybe that money has been canceled during Shemitah's Kesafin. Same thing for a bank account in the direction that you have a bank account.
A check is a
sharp book. So it's machlokas. We're not going to get into it now. It's a big machlokas what the status of a check is. How do you look at a check? An interesting machlokas in the Rav Moshe and Minchas Yitzchak, whatever. Again, we should have more time. We'll talk about it.
Don't have any money.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah, good. Okay, so again, these are all interesting points. In terms of the bank account, Rav Moon actually has a lot of stuff about this, about the bank account issue, because he basically said, Rav Orlean already pointed this out before. Your bank account, let's talk about a checking account. You can take out money whenever you want, right? But the bank really can use your money at the time that it's still in the bank, meaning it's basically assumed to be like a loan. The bank is borrowing money from you, and you can take the money back from whenever you want. So again, it's not so clear. There's some debate about this. And again, Ramon, if you want to look inside, he has a nice summary of the different issues back and forth on this point. But it's definitely possible that maybe you're taking money out of the bank also might be subject to Shemitah Kesafin. If you could take it out whenever you want, it could be that you could argue that... that
you can take it out whenever.
What'd you say? I can't say I ever have, unfortunately.
Like,
sorry.
Like 15 years ago.
Which is a good hobby. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I never saw it. I assume the idea is that the bottom line is that, you know, any case where all you usually can take out the money without a question.
Money, but you probably can't take it out, you know, in the hour before Rosh Hashanah.
Everyone talks about that, but he says if you go to an ATM, you can. So
even
if you don't go into the bank, you take it out from a Costco mat. And again, these are all points that are discussed. Okay, every one of these points is an interesting, relevant point. I'm just trying to give you the bottom line here in, you know, 2 minutes about this point. Basically, we say, yeah, it could be also. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. All these, again, I'm just giving a few examples, but you get the idea. All these kind of situations are situations where very possibly could be viewed as loans, and therefore, if you want to be able to take your money out of a bank account or get, again, credit card, you have to figure out which direction it goes. But right. But let's talk about you as a person, whatever way it is. Shemitah's Kesafin may apply to all these situations, which is why it's recommended strongly and really, not just recommended, but really, you really should make sure that every single person writes a prisbul to make sure that all these points are covered. Again, not everyone is so clear, but even if there's a tzada, maybe it's a possibility that maybe it's included. You should do a prisbul just to make sure that.
Are you also covering like girls that are daughters over bat mitzvah, or your sons over bar mitzvah, and everything? Because you say you can do it for your wife, but what about the unmarried.
Right, and Mistama, you could do it for them. The question is, do they have anything that they need it done for? Meaning, do they have any private bank accounts or private...
Or their private bank account, or that would flag it.
Mistama, yeah.
Once you get your salary.
Yeah, I know those things. So yeah, for sure, you could be their shliach just as well as you can be your wife's shliach. Absolutely.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
Everyone is being asked to do prosbul, isn't that like...
Okay, so this, I'm not going to have so much time to get into it. I don't think Rorlian is either. This is my next point. Okay, what time is it? It's 9:30. Okay, let me just take a few more minutes to talk about the basic concept of prosbul. And again, all these points, you could spend 3 months talking about this. In the sugya, this is a very big discussion in the Gemara. A lot of Rishonim and a lot of interesting things. I'm just going to touch the tip of the iceberg here. Again, if you want a little more of a summary, Rabbi Mona has a nice summary here. Again, he doesn't get to every point, but he touches on a lot of the points as well. Yeah, this book right here, in Hebrew or in English. But again, there's a lot of books that talk about that. Rav Orlean has another book there, but that's already straight halachas. Rav Rimon gives you a little bit more of the sources, you know, from the basic Gemaras to the halacha, as opposed to just the bottom line. Let's just briefly talk about a prosbul. Okay, so what is a prosbul and what does it do? So the answer is that Hillel, in the time of the Mishnah, basically instituted this concept of prosbul to basically prevent the negative effects of Shemitah's Kesafim from taking place. What exactly happens? So basically what a prosbul is, as we already alluded to, basically a person declares that he does not want to have his debt that he is owed from loans and whatever else might be included, he doesn't want them canceled by the Torah's institution of Shemitah's Kesafim at the end of the year. So therefore, after he writes the prosbul, he can still collect, after Shemitah's over, he can still collect all of his debts, all of his loans from anybody else. That's the basic idea. There's a lot of machlokes about exactly how that works. So I'll mention it in a minute, very briefly, but not in detail. The question is, I guess, two questions, and I'll end with this. Number one, how is Hillel able to go against the Torah? The Torah says the debts are canceled, and Hillel comes along and says they're not canceled. So point number one, just be aware, just understand that what Hillel tried to do is try to be in consonance with the spirit of the Torah. I mean, the Torah doesn't want you to stop giving loans to other people before Shemitah. That's what we said before. That's the third mitzvah losa say. Don't prevent yourself from giving loans. So Hillel said that's exactly what's happening. People are not lending, so I got to stop that. And he felt that value is more important than the strict concept of Shemitah's Kesafim. Therefore, he said, I'm going to go out of my way to find a halachic loophole, or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it's not a loophole, to say that Shemitah's Kesafim still is relevant. And what did you say?
That's correct.
So that's the hashkafa concept behind it. It's such an important value of making sure people can get loans that he felt it was worth it to do that. In terms of the technical halachic point, so the Gemara asks this question. It's discussing how could he do that halachically, and again, the machlok is exactly what the Gemara is asking. But the bottom line is the Torah throws out two basic concepts here, which again have to be discussed, but we don't have time now. One is hefker based in hefker, meaning that anything which a Beis Din does, the Beis Din decides that a certain person's property is hefker, is ownerless, the Beis Din has the right to do that with certain limitations. So here also, that's what the Gemara seems to say, is that if the Beis Din is going to say, well, even though the Torah declares that the money, that the debt is canceled, the Beis Din comes along and says, well, no, we decide that the money which belongs to the lender, which he just got to keep because of the cancellation of debts, that money can now be transferred, must be given back to the borrower. That's winner one. What did you say? Well, no, hefker based in hefker.
Say it once and he's done.
No, the Beis Din needs a mechanism to do that. Meaning, the Beis Din, you're not going to have every single Beis Din just say that. What Hillel did is made it into an actual takana that's exactly what everybody has to do.
Somebody wants to be a nice guy.
Right, there's a lot of factors. It's not so simple. Not so simple. And number two, they mention also, again, this is one of the other answers in the Gemara, that prosbul may only be relevant when Shemitah is Darabanan. Okay? That if Shemitah was actually Daraisa, so maybe prosbul doesn't work. Because Shemitah is only Darabanan, so therefore Hillel had more of a right to basically override the Torah's concept of Shemitah Kesafim and go straight to doing the prosbul. Now again, there's a machlokas of what this means and which we pass from. Like, we're not going into it now, but you have a basic idea of how something like this could work. And in terms of the question of how does it work, and then I'll probably stop with this, how does it work? So again, it's machlokas exactly how it works. But it seems that the concept is as follows, in some form or other. The concept is that you are declaring the Beis Din has the authority to collect your debts for you. Again, different versions of the Rishonim about exactly how this works, but the basic concept, in some form, the Beis Din is not, you're not the one collecting anymore. It's not your money. You gave over the authority to the Beis Din, and the Beis Din is a communal communal authority. It's not an individual. So therefore, they have the right to go collect your money for you, or at least to request that the person pay you back. And that's again part of the way that Purz Bull works. Again, this is based in the Mishnah. The Mishnah already has a case where if you give your documents of debt over to Beis Din and tell Beis Din collects for me, halachically that already works beforehand. And Hillel, you know, in some form expanded that concept to not just a regular halacha that one person would do on his own, but rather as an institution that everybody would do. Again, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot of discussion in Rishonim about exactly what this means. You can see a little bit of it summarized in Rav Rimon's Sefer. I guess the other points, I can stop here if you want to make sure to cover a few points that I didn't get to about when we do it during Elul, the end of Elul, or whatever. And just a little bit of the structure of Purz Bull. What'd you say? Yeah, so do you want to cover that, or you want me to mention it briefly now? If you want to cover it, you're welcome to. I had a question. I have one other last point for you. Okay, so that's the other point. I just remembered right now when I was talking about the Beis Din as an entity, I forgot to mention that I didn't answer Debbie's question before. So the answer of a corporation is that it's machlokas, meaning it's machlokas what the halachic status of a bank or a different kind of corporation, a conglomerate, is when it comes to these issues of halacha. Not just this, also in terms of mechiras chametz, in terms of ribis, in terms of a lot of questions. It's relevant. And some poskim say that it's basically a different entity that's not included in any of these halachas at all. Okay, it's not an individual, not included. But many poskim say, well, no, it is included, and there's a certain halachic structure called a shutvus, where it's like a partnership. The same way that if you have two people that partner together, they still are both subject to these rules. So to a bank also, or any type of institution, would be subject to the rules as well as a model of a group of people working together. So in that situation, the bank would be included. And from the bank's perspective, they would also have to write a Purz Bull, and you know, I think that's what they do. I'm not involved, and it doesn't affect you, by the way. Okay, what the bank has to do is not your problem. Your problem is only debts that you want to collect, or your account in the bank that you want to take out from, and stuff like that. It doesn't matter in terms of the payment that you have to give to the bank. That's their problem. It's not your problem.
Okay. Okay.
What'd you say?
If
so I think you probably should. I think that
She's talking about not necessarily shutvus, meaning a person can have a company and the company
right.
is incorporated.
Is there anything more about this that
we can both have companies that are not represented by us.
Right.
That meaning it's just
we 100%
his and 100% mine, and there's a loan between them. There's no other people.
I think they probably do, but I'm not so up on the.
I can't imagine that that's.
I'm assuming if people that are companies that are careful about these things that are shomer halacha probably should.
I think that's just you. I don't think
yeah, either of you. Maybe you should put it on there. Again, I don't look. You should look in the Sfarim and see. Okay, yeah, it seems like it's something that probably should be, you should bring up to them. But again, I'd be curious. He doesn't talk about that in here in that direction in terms of the banks or the conglomerates themselves. I'm assuming Rav Cohen talks about it in there.
It's less time to write the Purz Bull than it is to find the answer to the question.
He's absolutely right about that. Absolutely right about that.